Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. And also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page. We are already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And if you guys know for part one, you listened to already. If you haven't done so, you might be confused here. So go back and listen to part one. This is our second part of our conversation with David and Max McCauley. And David Nash over at 7 Seconds or Less podcast, one of our favorite podcasts outside of the Locked On Network that we listen to about the Phoenix Suns. So we're going to jump into part two of our discussion here, talk about the offseason now. We hit on the season so far from the Phoenix Suns, 11:48, the All-Star break. But let's zoom out here and kind of fast forward a little bit here to June and July and what could happen with the Phoenix Suns. So we'll kick it off here with our first question, and then we'll toss it David's way here first. It's about TJ Warren. But what would you do with them? Because for me, I personally feel like TJ Warren might be more of a trade asset at this point than as far as a long-term piece on this team. Do you think he should be more viewed as the long-term sixth man on this team, David, or do you think he's more be used as a trade chip to improve this team this summer?
It's an interesting question, Evan. I think, Max and I had a conversation on our podcast about whether the Suns might just dump his salary if they possibly can to a team that strikes out in free agency. That conversation was really around, and we might get into that soon, around, what the Suns' plans are and really only having $15 million in cap space. But I think on the value of his contract, if you can get him to buy into a six-man role, I'd still love to see it. I don't think we'll see it in the final 20 games here, but this is the kind of end stretch to a season where you should be testing TJ Warren in the six-man role before the offseason hits to kind of see how it looks, how he takes to it. You're not going to get much out of the rest of the season except for developing the young guys. So I wish that we would see that, although I'm pretty sure we're going to see him straight back into the starting power forward role when he's healthy after the All-Star break. But, it's funny. He's around $10 million. So it is a valuable contract if you're looking to make trades. And I do think that the Suns are going to be in the market to make trades. And as we discussed in part one of these podcasts is, the core is looking like being Bridges, Booker and Ayton. So Bridges probably takes Warren's spot in the starting lineup. And I've never really been a great believer in him being a starting power forward in the NBA, at least on a good team. So I think you have to look at it. Max and I have discussed a hell of a lot or not discussed a hell of a lot, just really not knowing what his value around the league would be. So you've kind of got to do your calling around and seeing what you might be able to get. But yeah, I wouldn't rule out his contract being used in a point guard trade or just some other move to upgrade the roster overall.
Yeah, so the Phoenix Suns are really testing that old axiom, you could never have too many wings in the NBA, right? they're doing their best stress test that one. And I think that what it comes down to is, so here, are they going to sign Kelly Oubre this summer? Because if that's their plan to sign that guy to, a 3 or 4 year contract for, over $10 million a year, you got to start looking around and being like, all right, what are we really building here? Because like we said, Mikal Bridges, that's part of the team. I think they're still trying to, try the Josh Jackson thing. Maybe Josh Jackson will end up being part of a trade at some point. But
I like how he became the Josh Jackson thing in a year and a half.
It's definitely the Josh Jackson thing for me, man, because for some reason there's a lot of disagreement on that. So I just have to call it the thing because I can't describe it any other way.
No, I get it.
So we have that going on. We have all these things going on. And to me, it just kind of feels like TJ doesn't fit into this thing. As David said, we're building around those three guys, but especially Booker and Ayton. And I think that most fans would recognize that TJ Warren isn't the optimal fit with those guys. He's a little better now because he can shoot. But the defensive thing and also just sort of the what's the way to put it? Sort of the demeanor thing. I think Ayton and Booker are both sort of laid back guys. And I think you want guys around them who are less laid back, which is why I think the Oubre trade has been looked at so positively. And TJ might be even more laid back than those two. So I think you're, just from a personality standpoint and like a play fit standpoint, TJ to me feels like someone who's not really where the Suns need to be building going forward.
Yeah, I think ultimately one thing to consider with that trade, you talked about dumping him. I don't think it would be the value where you have to dump him, like give up anything to get rid of him. I think there's plenty of teams that would like to have him on his contract, especially next season, going down a little bit from what he's at this year. But it is fascinating to think about Warren's contract and Warren as a player as sort of a litmus test for how aggressively the Suns are going to really use kind of wheel and deal, if that's going to continue like it did under McDonough, if Jones is going to be more of a relationship and development focused executive, just because I think the ultimate thing to do with his contract would be to flip it, to do the Michael Carter Williams thing, to do even the Torian Prince maneuver that the Hawks were sniffing around on at the trade deadline this year. Good player, reasonable salary. I mean, Prince hasn't been paid yet, but you think he's probably going to be gettable for something reasonable. And to just move that guy at peak value and get what you can and reset things a little bit. And I think the Suns are in a perfect position to do that, because I don't necessarily think Warren is like an absolute no-brain, incredible fit for all the reasons that you guys just listed. I don't know if he's a perfect guy to pair with this trio or whoever ends up being this core. I also just think the idea of a sixth man being like a scoring forward, I think in theory it works, but it is going to be a definite work in progress for whatever team tries to convert him into that, whether it's the Suns or someone else. It's just not really the type of guy that typically teams turn their offense over to in bench situations. So overall, I think the ideal thing to do, if you're really just trying to play it from a value standpoint, is to flip him. But they've invested so much in him. He's gotten so much better. It's going to be fascinating. And I think ultimately I would guess that they keep him, but he's probably their best chip right now, considering how much he makes and how much room he, I guess, still has to grow. If you think about just, he's only 24, 25.
It's interesting how this whole teacher discussion kind of ties into what happens with Kelly Oubre, because like Max mentioned his points that he brought up, that whatever happens with him is pretty much going to decide what happens to TJ Warren. Because if Oubre does leave, I think the door stays open for TJ to stay. But if they do want to keep Oubre, he's likely got the door for a point guard, maybe just in a salary dump, like you mentioned as well, Brennan. So let me ask the question here to start off with Dave, and let me ask you, with how Kelly Oubre has been playing recently, I know he just had a career high game against the Clippers and a really embarrassing blowout loss there, but what would you do as far as his contract this summer? Because he's going to be a restricted free agent. I believe his restricted tag is around $9.6 million. So they'll definitely do the qualifying offer, I imagine, see what happens to restricted free agency. And would you say if someone offered him around $14 million for 3 years, let's say $42 million over 3 years, does that put the Suns in a weird position where they might not be able to match there or might not want to match in the first place? Because when you look at Oubre's numbers, I mean, his box score numbers look pretty good, but most recently his plus minus looks pretty bad, and also his shooting numbers really fell off a cliff recently.
Yeah, I think Oubre is an interesting one. I think, you know, what you and Brennan just touched on with TJ and Kelly is kind of where the conversation is at. You know, he is a restricted free agent, so can go out and sign an offer sheet. That's probably what I'd encourage the Suns to try and get Kelly to do. Try and see what he can sign out for somewhere else, which will probably take a little while because most of the big free agents will be the priority to begin in July. So, you know, I'd probably test the market, see what he's capable of getting on the open market, and then have a long, hard think about it and what else you're going to do to the roster. I don't think you can sign Kelly long-term, as Max said, and keep TJ on the roster. I just don't think it's something that they should be looking to do. And, you know, 14 mil, you know, I'd probably look at it. I'm still a big believer in Kelly. I think his kind of overall numbers on off stuff is going to grade out to be a hell of a lot better on a good team. We're seeing flashes of him, of what he can do. And I think Max makes a good point. He brings a different angle to this team that not a lot of our core bring. You know, we have a lot of mellow guys. We need high energy guys around this team to bring them along. And he fits the age bracket as well. So it's not so much a want or need thing, I think, particularly with that cap hold. As you said, if he's offered around 14 mil, it's really only going to cost an additional, you know, five or so going over the cap match an offer sheet of say 14 mil a year. And the interesting thing there is going to be whether Sava is willing to I guess use those advantages of the CBA to bring Holmes and Oubre back after bringing in, you know, the three or four free agents that Jones has already flagged that he wants to do. Because with all this losing and saying that you want to turn it around, there is a mechanism there to go over the cap with both Oubre and Holmes and bring them back whilst adding other talent. And it's going to be really interesting to see if the Suns choose to do that and kind of pony up and back up their words here, because it's not something that Sava's been willing to do in the past, but it might be something that they need to do if they're, you know, really serious about putting a good contending team around Devin Booker for next year.
One thing I would really love to know, which I don't know, and maybe you guys have more insight on this following the team, is what Kelly Oubre's work ethic is and how much he acts to improve his game in the offseason. Because I think there's a lot there with him that is just ultra intriguing in terms of how good he could become, because his motor is ridiculously good. He's incredibly good motor. And also his handle for his size. Dude's legitimately 6'7", 6'8", with a really long wingspan. His wingspan is rivaling Mikal. He doesn't look as lanky because, you know, Mikal is the lankiest guy in the world. But he has a really long wingspan, and he's big and he's tough. And so I would love to know if that's the kind of guy who's in the gym constantly and he's working to get better. I see a lot of freaking upside with him. I really do. There's nothing wrong with the shot. It's not broken. It's not great yet. It's fine. But I could see it getting a lot better if he works on it a lot. I think he has a really nice ability to drive. You'd like to see him be a little bit better of a passer and a playmaker, but you know, you could be a really valuable NBA wing without having that part of it. So that's really the big question to me. And if the Suns believe in the work ethic part of it, I would not be surprised to see them agree with Kelly early. They probably wouldn't sign the paper yet because they want to keep the cap hold in the books, especially if they're signing for significantly more. But it wouldn't totally shock me based on what we've heard from James Jones and Kelly about how much. I think, Evan, you're the one who put out the Kelly mentioning how much he wants to be here, right, on Twitter?
Yeah.
So I think that it wouldn't shock me to see them, a handshake agree on something before free agency even starts.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And looking more into it, I know Brennan has really been interested in Kelly. And I, being around him more, like you said, Max, he does have a pretty intense pregame workout he does all the time. And he seems pretty locked in during that. So I think I'd bet on him if you stay on guys like Devin Booker and DeAndre and Mikal Bridges. I think you can buy into him pretty much long-term being a pretty good energy wing guy, whether it's a six-man or a starter in the league. But before we go on here to our next segment, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about the Locked On NBA Network. If you're not already doing so, go ahead and on your Twitter account, follow at Locked On NBA Net. Bert and I both follow the account, and we're also synced up on there. Like you guys know here on Locked On Suns, that you guys enjoy our coverage every day here. But there's so many other great voices around the network, like Josh Lloyd at Locked On Fantasy, John Krause in Boston, David Locke in Utah, just to name a few. So if you're not already, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net for some of the best insight around NBA Twitter.
Before we move on here, I want to also tell you guys about Homie. Homie is an exciting new company, really changing the way that you buy or sell your home. There's a lot of companies that do similar things here, but what those companies try to do is make money off of the purchase. They buy the home from you and flip it for a little bit of extra profit. Homie doesn't do that. They are just a service to help you make it easier and make it as cheap as possible for you to buy or sell your home. What they do is allow you to sell any priced home for just $199 to list and just $1,299 at close, meaning that on average, Homie customers are saving over $10,000. They also have a team of lawyers and real estate agents to help you along the way, as well as an easy to use mobile interface and mobile app that smooth that process along as well. So you're able to navigate all of the paperwork and everything mobile and make it even easier every step of the way. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Again, that's Homie, H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Alrighty, I will start us off here with the next question. And that is thinking a little bit more about the offseason. And there's been a lot of controversy, I guess. I think a little bit too much has been made of this. But the idea that the Suns are not focused enough, or in some cases, people seem to wonder if they're focused really at all on the draft. They didn't really fill out their scouting department as much as some people would have hoped when they fired a few guys along with Ryan McDonough. And we know this draft is weak. How do you guys think about what they're going to do? We know if they get the number one pick, they're probably just going to take Zion Williamson and never look back. But if it isn't like that, and maybe they get the fourth pick, and that means they get the 34th pick, we'll start with Max here. Just how do you think they're viewing things? We don't know. We can't read their minds, but like, how would you do it? And how do you think they're looking at it with this roster that's already so stacked?
Yeah, well, based on what you've said, what you pointed out with what James Jones has said about the, you know, the lack of a need for scouting, not having a scouting department. Also, he's mentioned wanting to bring in, I think, 4 or 5 NBA rotation players, what he said with Kellen and John Bloom. And I think he may have said something similar with Gambo, too. I would not be surprised at all to see them try to move on from that pick if it's not Zion. And I get it, too. I mean, what we've seen for the past 5 years, a bunch of drafting people with potential, and they're not good, and the team sucks. And at this point, it's in, you know, it's, we're trying to salvage this Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton core, right? We don't want to trade Devin Booker. That's where some people are getting to. That's not what we want to be doing. And I think that if you just draft somebody like Ja Morant with the 3rd or 4th pick, like, you might as well just trade Devin Booker at that point. I mean, that guy's going to take 2 or 3 years, and I don't think we have 2 or 3 more years of rebuilding left in Devin Booker. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I do think the kind of scouting story from James in that quote was maybe a little bit overblown. I think you've referenced it before, Brendan. You know, it's hard to tell, particularly myself, not being around the team, being all the way over here. But, you know, I don't think that they just, you know, skeletoned the draft department and don't have plans to rebuild things at least somewhat back to what they were. But it's not too uncommon to see guys leave when the GM's fired, and it probably take time to build that staff back up. But, you know, I do think that there is a shift away from wanting to bring more projects in because of how many projects are already on the roster. And I think another quote from Sava that maybe got a little bit misconstrued in the preseason was his one around being done rebuilding and it's time to flick the switch. You know, I think he could have probably done a little bit better job explaining himself and maybe coming out and clarifying on that later, which, you know, we basically haven't heard from him since, which is a little bit frustrating. But I think that was more in reference, at least I took it more in reference to just be, we've done the draft thing now, we've got 3 players that we really believe in and as our core, and we're not going to bring more projects in to build around them. So, yeah, I think it is Zion or bust. I think you either win the lottery and take Zion and he can have an effect on the court right away as well as long term. Whereas if it's anything else in the 2 to 6 range, I think they should be looking to move the pick. So that'll be really interesting to see. I think if they do draft someone in that range, then I would expect a lot of the projects that are currently on the roster to not be there anymore, because you just can't carry that many rookies. We're seeing it this year. It's impossible to carry that many rookies and have a competing team, particularly in the West. So, you know, everything points to trying to please Devin Booker and build a contender around him sooner rather than later. So I'd be very surprised if they're drafting in that range this year.
Yeah, I wrote on Bright Side of the Sun yesterday about Zion Williamson. I have really no qualms saying that. I think he's the best prospect in the last decade or so to come out as a college basketball. He's just dominating. And I think if you think more about it, just should just be Zion or bust, because he can fill up most of those gaps the Suns have on their roster. But if they do land number 2 overall, let me ask you this, Brandon. We'll go over to Max and David after that. Just about the possibility or the value you could get if you're shopping the number 2 overall pick. Let's say they do end up number 2 overall, and let's say the draft is rigged and the New York Knicks do get Zion Williamson, which we all think will happen. What do you think is the possibility or the value that you could get, so to say, for the number 2 overall pick, the rights of John Rand or RJ Barrett? Because that's like a Drew Holiday, a Mike Conley. What could you even get for that?
Yeah, I think you could get something pretty good, right? I mean, even though I think there's almost 2 conversations you have to have about the value of the picks in this draft. One is from the teams picking these players, the value might be not so high. We might be able to see some more movement, especially just knowing the teams that are at the top this year. It's a different type of group because there isn't as much tanking. Like, the Hawks are going to have 2 top 10 picks, but they're not at ground zero of their rebuild. They want to add some talent. They want to add some guys who make sense. The Suns kind of in the same position, even though they haven't had the on-court success that Atlanta's had. So a little bit lower than most drafts in that case, but it still is the number 2 overall pick. And I think that means you're going to be able to get something. That's still a young player with a lot of team control that, you know, even if it's RJ Barrett, maybe he's the number 7 pick in another draft. Maybe John Morant's the number 9 pick in another draft or whatever it is. Like, those guys are still what they represent to a team resetting is pretty massive. I mean, that's still somebody who could be a franchise cornerstone player for 8-9 years. So I think you could get something pretty solid. I mean, I think it's almost a fool's errand to guess who's going to be available even 1 month from now with what the NBA has shown us. But I think that could be the centerpiece of a pretty decent deal to get a solid upgrade, maybe an all-star level player, maybe something slightly below that. But a guy who is really going to be a part of the team, I think you could get on a reasonable, you know, Drew Holiday's contract's pretty reasonable. Somebody like that, I think, is definitely in that discussion.
That's funny you just brought up Drew Holiday, because I was going to be like, if we're really in Evan's scenario where the Knicks win number one and then trade Zion for AD and sign Katie and Kyrie, then we could have the New Orleans Pelicans reuniting Zion and RJ, and we'll take Drew.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
But yeah, I totally agree. You're going to get something for it. I mean, teams are going to fall in love with somebody else in the draft. That happens every single year. And also, we're also at the stage where we start to sour on the entire draft. I think there's going to be a little more enthusiasm about it as it goes on. People will start to really like guys like, you know, Jarrett Culver is one. I think Cam Reddish has come on a little bit lately. He's somebody that teams will talk themselves into. But for the Suns in particular, I mean, I'd be all about shopping the second pick overall, but it's got to be tough. You don't just trade it no matter what. You have to get the right guy, because even though I really don't want another project, like, you cannot just trade the second pick of the draft for Kevin Love. You just can't do that. It would be really, really stupid. So it's got to be the right deal. Like Brendan said, it's tough to hypothesize with, but I think Drew Holiday is the kind of guy, like, that's like the level. That's like the lowest level guy I'm willing to do that for, I think.
Drew would be ideal, I think. It's hard thinking of when the draft is. I really wish free agency was before the draft for a whole bunch of reasons, but for selfish reasons in this scenario, because I think, you know, when Boston can actually come in and bid for Anthony Davis is going to mean that maybe the Davis stuff drags on until July. So, yeah, maybe don't rule out the Suns taking someone like RJ Barrett, but him only being on the team for 10 or 15 days before he's eventually traded for someone like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. For, you know, someone like Drew Holiday. Drew would be great. You know, I've got a few names written down with question marks. Love is one. Not that I'd be into that, but just something that I think we need to watch. Conley's another. I think Memphis will be bottoming out and may look to do a deal. You know, maybe it's a swap of picks as well as Conley, rather than, as Max said, you shouldn't just be handing the number two pick over to a team and taking a bad contract back. And Bradley Beal's another. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening with him and what the Wizards do. But yeah, we need to be looking to teams that are really going to value a pick right at the top of the draft and maybe want to get off one of their older veterans because they're moving in a different direction.
Did you guys see that Beal at All-Star Weekend like doubled down on committing to the Wizards?
I saw not only that, he said that there were players coming up to him and asking about joining the Wizards, which just seemed like an outright lie to me.
Yeah, agreed. What the hell was he doing? I don't know. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, that would certainly be interesting, especially with that John Wall albatross on their books. Now that just looks really rough. But let's go here to James Jones and talking about him a little bit. And let's start off with David here. The question being, what are the odds that James Jones gets retained as a GM? Because, I mean, he certainly speaks like a guy who's going to be the general manager and officially the interim tag we ripped off here in about 2 months' time. And I think last week on our podcast here, I said 97% chance of James Jones is staying just based off what we're hearing and what we're seeing every day around the facility. But what would you say, David?
Yeah, you never say never, but I'd probably agree with that kind of 97%. I think it's looking pretty strong. Probably the 3% would be down to, you know, maybe him knocking Sava back when he offers the full-time job because he's not happy with the terms of the contract or something. I think it's his job to take. I said directly after the trade deadline, there's really nothing he can do between now and the draft to prove his worth as a GM. Everything has been done to now. He's very impressive on the air. I like a lot of the things that he's saying. Him and Igor seem to have a great cohesion in terms of where they think the team is going. So they should have just ripped that tag off after the deadline, I think, because it's going to now be a story leading up to the draft. And really, it should be that he's the permanent GM well before the draft when you're doing workouts, interviews, combine stuff. So I really wish that they just did it now because waiting, there's just absolutely no advantage to it that I can see.
Yeah, I would have said it was 100% chance, when this all went down. And the only reason it's down to the mid to high 90s is because it's like, why hasn't it happened yet, would be the question, right?
Yeah.
I think the cynic in me, the only explanation I can think of is that Sarver doesn't want to pay two GMs at once. But other than that, I don't get it at all. I think he's kind of the GM in all but name. So my response to that would be I'd be shocked if he were not the GM next season.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, Bren, you were close with me around 95, almost 100% with me. So there's really not much to add there on the James Jones part of things. But if you're looking for outside candidates, I know Dave King, Ron Brett said this some this week. I know Bob Young of The Athletic also wrote one earlier this season, vouched for David Griffin. But if you're an outside executive, let's say you're coming from a successful team like a Mike Zarin in Boston, for example, would anyone even want to come to what's happening right now in Phoenix? I mean, you see the constant turnover with this team. And if you're and actually respect the GM candor on the league, I think you're kind of getting advised to avoid the situation, aren't you?
Definitely. I think that the two stories that would have everyone pausing, one I mentioned earlier was the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander thing where McD got shot down on that trade, which, you know, right around now, it'd be nice to have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think, on the team. And so GM's going to be kind of scared about that. And the other one was, I don't know if you guys remember the Woj report, I think around the time that McD is firing, the stories, I guess, from other GMs talking about how they would hear Sarver yelling on the phone when they were negotiating with McD.
Yeah, that didn't get enough attention.
No, it didn't.
That was wild.
I think it would have got it. It's one of those things where we probably should have just tweeted, right? I think it was buried in the story. But, if that's at all true, and if that's true, guess what? Every single GM candidate knows it, if that's true. That would be something that would stop, I think, almost anybody.
Yeah, and I'm a bit worried about Sarver's, I guess, attitude towards this. That one interview that he did do after the McDonough firing, he did kind of allude to this, and it scared me a little bit. His attitude seems to be, oh, well, we've got Devin Booker, we've got DeAndre Ayton, we've got all these assets. Why wouldn't any GM, you know, I think the quote that he said is there's only 30 of these jobs in the league. So, of course, they're going to come to Phoenix for a job if they want a GM job. And it's just such the wrong attitude. It's also the wrong attitude if you're looking at free agents and things and saying we've got Ayton and Booker. I think we're kind of seeing with the facility stuff and the stories that have come out with that there's so much more into it these days. You've got to look after your employees. You've got to give them a place and an environment that they want to come and work. It's not good enough anymore to just kind of go, we've got two great young players. Anyone's going to want to come and take a job here, because yeah, you're right, Evan. I don't think any of those assistant GMs that are in great organizations would be beating down the door to take a full-time role in Phoenix right now. And nor would David Griffin, as much as I love that idea, as much as I love the parallels between that Cleveland team that had Kyrie and was struggling before LeBron decided to come home and David Griffin essentially never getting to test whether he was going to be able to pull them out of that. He'd be intrigued by that in Phoenix, but there's so many negatives at the same time, which I think is really going to stall them in a search to adding an experienced GM. And again, that just weighs into why I think it's Jones's job.
Yeah, do you think there's going to be much of a search at all, Brennan, or do you think it's just James Jones' job at this point?
Yeah, I think it is James Jones' job. And I think what I brought up the other day when we were talking about it a little bit was exactly what Max said, which is just why has it not happened yet? Like, it's not like he's hit a home run this season, but he also hasn't screwed anything up. So it's just puzzling that it hasn't been made official. And maybe it is a matter of payment, but I would imagine Jones is being paid pretty nicely to do his former position as well. So I don't know. I don't necessarily understand it, but I would agree. I think we all kind of are assuming that'll happen. The draft combine's on May 15th. The season ends obviously early April. So I think sometime in those 5 weeks, we'll probably see that get locked up. But let's move on here. Maybe talk a little bit about free agency, how this roster will shape up this summer. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you guys about the best new way to access our show. That is through your smart speaker. So if you have a Google Home, if you have an Amazon Echo, whatever you use around the house to listen to music and podcasts, you can check out our show on the speaker. So just say, play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. Just tell the speaker. It'll queue up the last episode, start playing it for you. You'll be able to catch up on anything you missed here Monday through Friday on Locked On Suns. So if you aren't already, definitely go check out the show that way and support us in all the ways you can. Alrighty. Evan, do you want to take a question here on free agency? I feel like I've been dominating with my questions.
Yeah, no problem. I was thinking more of doing like a mock thing at the end here as far as offseason goes, just what we would do, how you do it with the GM shoes kind of thing. Let me leave that toward the end here, maybe the next question or two. But what I wanted to hit on, you had an interesting one on your list still, Brandon, that I wanted to hit, and that's Igor Kokoschkov. Is he safe or not? Because I know David has been one of the biggest Igor vouchers I've seen on Suns Twitter, and he's had to defend him a few times already this season as far as that goes with a lot of hot and cold takes we see on Suns Twitter. But let me throw it your way first, David, just about the possibility that if the Suns do have another horrible stretch here, this losing streak continues after the All-Star break, or they win, like, let's say 15 or less games this season, are you worried that with how little stability there's been in this organization, they still could fire their head coach like you are?
Yeah, I'm pushing back and fighting any way that I can, but unfortunately the on-court product isn't giving me a hell of a lot to defend myself with. But I'm still a believer in him long-term. I've kind of been on the record of saying I think the only way that he loses his job before next season comes around is if either Devin Booker or DeAndre Ayton have, you know, completely lost him, and, you know, maybe in their exit interview or even before, if the, you know, they keep losing games down this stretch, there's a moment that suggests that he's lost the players. I think that's the only way he loses his job. I think, you know, as I said before, Jones and him being on the same page, reading from the same playbook a lot of the time when they're doing their media, I think there is a long-term vision and synergy between the organization. But at the end of the day, the head coach is generally the easiest firing to make when things go horribly wrong. So I'd even take Ayton out of it. I'd say it's probably just on Devin Booker, to be honest. If he's displeased with how things have gone with his coach, then we might see him removed. But I don't think there's any suggestion yet, at least, that that's the case. I think he's just frustrated overall. I don't think it's necessarily to do with the coach. He's been quite complimentary of him when asked about, you know, his IQ and his coaching instincts around the team. So I think he's safe for now, but I will just kind of end on the fact that, you know, that's generally the easiest and the first firing that's ever made when you're trying to change the image of a team. So he is on eggshells a little bit, and I hope that they can, I guess, in his second season, give him what they were supposed to give him in his first, because if he is fired, if he has lost the players, I don't really see it as being too much his own fault rather than, you know, what he was set up with.
Yeah, I've been much more critical of Igor than David has been, but I do agree that I view him as fairly safe. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he were fired, but I would be surprised, because I think the Suns understand that they've had a lot of turnover in a lot of areas. And I think just for like consistency's sake alone, for continuity's sake, you got to kind of keep around that coach for more than 1 year and just try to build something with it, because it's just, you can't keep firing your coach every single season. It's not going to lead to any sort of sustained success at all. And yeah, Igor was dealt a bad hand. I mean, we all know that. We talked about how they didn't get him a point guard. It's insane. You can't expect to win in the NBA without a point guard. Now, do I think Igor's done well with his bad hand? No, I think he's been pretty awful with his bad hand, but it's still a bad hand. And I think he deserves a little more time to work with something that's, you know, a little more reasonable. I think you gave him a non-NBA roster. He didn't succeed with that. Let's maybe try to give him an NBA roster and give him a chance with that.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Evan, I think I'm looking back at the schedule, and this is more of a server thing than my fears from a Suns perspective of losing their coach for the umpteenth time in the past few years is more of Sarver getting antsy than any failures on Kokoschkov's part. But I think looking back, it was the Kings game on December 4th. That was the one where they went down 20 in the first quarter, or 30 or whatever it was, and fought back and cut it down. They only lost by 17. I think that game on December 4th was when I asked you the first time if Igor might get fired. Is that right?
Yeah, they scored 9 points in that quarter.
Yeah, that was the first time we had that conversation off the air. And then I think we waited like another month before we had it on the air. But it wouldn't surprise me just for that exact reason. I mean, this is a guy who fired his general manager 2 weeks before, or less than 2 weeks before a regular season, fired a head coach three games into a season. Like, stability, normalcy are clearly not not to be expected. So that's the only reason I actually think it's a decent possibility.
Yeah, Brendan, I agree. The lows are so low sometimes. If that happened again, if they had another stretch, I think it wasn't it two games in a row they didn't score 10 points in the first quarter?
Yeah, it was the Blazers with the
Blazers to get to, right? Yeah, if that happened again, or say they just had some other way of total incompetence for like a week worth of games, that could compound things for sure.
Yep. Yeah, that's what kind of worries me a little bit, just this franchise with no continuity recently. And that's really worrisome if you want to, with the max contract starting with Devin Booker, you got to start getting things right around him. But let's move on to our next question here. It's going to be more towards free agency. And we've hit on it a few times, especially in part one, but the James Jones comments on Burns and Gambo last week about adding three to five players in the 25 to 30 range via free agency. But really, that's almost impossible with the salary cap space looking at that. So pretty much he's opening up trades as a possibility as far as improving the team. And if you're adding three to five new guys and including maybe a draft pick as well, or two, if you include the second round draft pick, that's almost three to seven new players on this team. So it's going to be entirely most likely another different roster on Devin Booker and DeAndre next season. So Brent, I'll start with you first. What do you think about those comments, and does it maybe tip his hand as far as how big of an overhaul this could be?
I think it definitely does. Right. I think that of talk is exactly what makes you think that he is safe in his position, that he already has such grand plans for the summer. I mean, if you're in the job, you have to, but just the confidence with which he discusses that stuff makes me A, think he's going to be the one to do those moves, but B, I believe him. Like, I think he's talked about development and progress quite a bit this season, but he's also expressed the frustration, I think, kind of reading between the lines, that it should have happened already and could have been happening to a greater degree this season. So I would not be surprised if he makes pretty large scale wholesale moves. And I think if you're a Suns fan, you have to be hoping that those favors and things that he's been doing for different teams and agents and players around the league this year, come back to help the Suns a little bit this summer. Maybe they're able to pull something off that they normally wouldn't be able to, just as a result of kind of opening their doors up again a little bit in a way that they weren't with Ryan McDonough. So I think that those are real. I think it's probably overblown to think that it's going to be five completely new players. I tweeted at the time, like, you know, maybe that's just Rashawn Holmes and Kelly Oubre getting re-signed and then three guys coming in. I don't know. I mean, it's also 4 months away from him even being able to pull that off. So it's definitely not a number people should read too much into. But as far as resetting things, I think we should expect another summer of fireworks.
Yeah, five is clearly ridiculous. But if you want to look in like to the three-ish, four-ish, the super high-end range, I think this is the context in which David, I think, is referring to our conversation about TJ Warren just being dumped into the cap space. That's, you start to think about, like, how is it possible to sign three to four free agents for the Suns this offseason, and that starts to become how it's possible, right? You need to start getting rid of what they have right now. You need to do things like you stretch Tyler Johnson. And by the way, I think people, like, you know, cringe at that, and I get why, but take a look at 2020 free agency, and maybe James Jones is looking at this too. It is barren. There's nothing there, man. Yeah. It's Davis, and Davis might not even be a free agent at that time, right? And that's basically it. Draymond, man, are you the guy who wants to pay Draymond?
Whatever Draymond is at age like 32, yeah.
Exactly. So it's tough, man. So I understand the desire and the impetus towards just trying to go all out this free agency period. It's something the Suns have always been looking at. You can look at the way TJ's contract dips, and they sort of infringe on that space recently, but they've always been targeting this under McD. It's a big free agency. There's a lot of guys available. There's going to be some money. So if they're going to try to do that, I get it. It's going to be tough to do it in a way that's not damaging to the team long-term, though, I think.
Yeah, I think at the moment we've got eight guaranteed contracts if you include Tyler Johnson opting into his player option, which he's most certainly going to do. And then Oubre and Holmes on top of that would bring you to 10. So that is five roster spots. So, you know, one or two draft picks and three or four free agents probably is realistic. What level those free agents are at with the money that they have available to them, I guess, is the big question right now. I've been on this for a couple of seasons. If they can actually bring in, you know, three or four guys that are starting quality or rotational players, and everyone kind of moves down the depth chart a little bit for next season, they might actually have something to work with. I think for the last little while, why we're seeing the Suns struggle so much is because everyone's playing either out of positions or up a role in terms of what they should be doing in the NBA, even down to someone like Devin Booker is obviously not playing his optimum role in the NBA, and that's why we see him get a lot of the criticism that he does. So I think the philosophy is right. How they're actually going to execute that when we see $15 million in space is really difficult to grade out. I think what Evan said is probably correct in that we should probably expect some trades, whether they're talking about free agency or trades. I think that's one way that they're going to be able to bring these 3 to 5 players in rather than just looking at straight signing guys in July.
Let's make things easier here. We're going to end today's show with a fun exercise we usually like to do with our guest here. And I think it's the first time we've had all four of us on the show to do it here. It's putting us all in the GM's shoes here and thinking about what the possibilities could be for this team this offseason. Now we have Tyler Johnson expiring contract on the table. We're going to take out the draft here because that's just so unpredictable here. If they do get Zion, that kind of changes everything. So let's say they don't get Zion. They land number 2, number 3 overall. I'll put it over in David's shoes first, and we'll go to Max, then Brandon. I'll finish it off here. You have the 4 here, David. You have all these picks. You have the expiring contracts. You have the cap space. What are you going to do starting out after the lottery?
I'm going to go and sign Ricky Rubio, Evan. We've got $15 million in space at the moment. That would be the guy that I would target. Point guard should be the biggest priority for this team. He's got the history with the head coach, Igor Kokoskov, so he can run the show pretty easily from camp onwards. I think that's one thing that we saw this season, even though they didn't even end up bringing anybody in. With Booker injured in camp, I think the team already started behind the eight ball a little bit. So that history there with him is an added plus and a veteran presence around the team. And then, you know, that's all your cap space gone. So addressing free agency for power forward might be out of the question. So I don't really have any names there for you, but I'd be looking at consolidating some of those assets, whether it is the, you know, number 2 or 3 pick, whether it is Josh or TJ's contract. They also have the Milwaukee pick as well. I think now's the time that they need to start looking to address both the starting point guard and power forward position. But if all I'm working with is that $15 million in space, the first and most important move I would is finally getting a point guard on this team.
Yeah, it's impossible to disagree with that. That's definitely objective number one. I think I'll just build on what David said. I guess if I'm looking to try to get a power forward to go along with that, which I think makes a lot of sense. And I'm just, it's like basically a buzzword on our podcast now, David, but I'm going to bring up Mirotić. if you really want to go get Mirotić, and I think if you can get Rubio at Mirotić in one offseason, that would just be incredibly good. That's when the TJ Warren into space trade comes up, right? That you yep. trade him into Brooklyn space or whatever team misses out on Kevin Durant and Kyrie and et cetera, et cetera. A team that's still trying to, you know, compete and thinks they're good enough and they just, you know, need a little more scoring power. That's who you dump TJ Warren onto. Maybe you get a second round pick, maybe you don't, but you
use that stretching space for Mirotić. Stretching Tyler would get you $13 million in space, as you alluded to before, Max, or something that you and I discussed on our episode this week is, you know, maybe you attach one of those assets they have to Tyler Johnson and you can kind of free up $19, $20 million. Mm-hmm. So there are avenues to add to that cap space and get a guy like Mirotić, which I would definitely be on board with.
Yeah, and the asset we talked about was the Milwaukee pick. And man, if I were the Suns, I would be using that to do anything with, because there's no way in hell I want the Suns to make that pick. There's just no point to make that pick. You really think we need another like non-lottery first-round development guy on this team? Is that really what we need?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think I would maybe approach things slightly differently. Maybe use that first use the Suns first round pick this year. Obviously we're not really talking about who they would pick there, but maybe try to use that in a point guard trade, like we said before. I think the other thing about the guys, Conley and Holiday specifically, that are available there, maybe even throw Kyle Lowry in there, although I don't know if he quite fits into what I'm about to say, which is just that those guys are both known for being like incredible teammates, incredible leaders. So I think that is one thing that especially stands out to me about both of those players. Maybe they're both a little bit overpaid, but I think they're two guys who would really make a difference. And I think culture impossible to measure, especially for us outsiders, but needs to really change, you know, really is another important part of what needs to happen this summer. I think it's one area Jones will especially target. I think it matters to him a lot more than it did the last guys. So those are a few targets. We kind of know the names at point guard at this point, trade and free agency. We've been talking about it all year, but for power forwards though, I think there's some interesting names there. Mirotić, of course, is one. I like a bunch. Al-Farouq Aminu stands out to me. I think Jamichael Green is another name that stands out to me. Evan has brought up Noah Vonleh before. I think he's somebody who could make some sense. Taj Gibson. So I think there's just more guys that you could get for pretty cheap at power forward. I think you could get a little more creative spending money that way and still maybe have some more left. But I want to also say if they stretch Tyler Johnson and they made that trade, it's going to make absolutely no sense because they would have been able to free more cap space by stretching Anderson and getting $5 million on the books the next three seasons compared to the six and change that it'll be for Johnson. So that would just be puzzling from a contract management standpoint. But obviously if they see something and want to strike, I get it. I'll also just mention how perfect a fit and how absolutely impossible it would ever be to happen. Marcus Morris would be here. He would be perfect. He would be so perfect for what the Suns need next to Ayton, especially as like kind of a stopgap as they maybe develop a bench option, somebody that'll fill that long term. But I know that's not going to happen. He's not coming back here.
Weirdly fascinated with the Morris twins free agency this summer. It's going to be very interesting to see where they both land up and who gets paid what. Hopefully not another deal like they signed with the Suns last time.
Yeah, they deserve to get paid, and maybe not Keith. I think I'm not a fan, but Marcus Morris, I mean, he should get some money. He's had a great year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marcus Morris actually makes a lot of sense in Brooklyn if I'm thinking about it. If they don't get Tobias Harris, which I thought would happen all along, it kind of makes a lot of sense next to Jared Allen. But for me, I'm going to go with Ricky Rubio, like David said. I think that's the one name I'm locking on. And also, if you're connecting the dots a little bit back to the Tyson Chandler buyout, his agent, Jeff Schwartz, the same agent as Ricky Rubio, is also represents Kemba Walker too. I imagine if he's being realistic there, he's trying to get a favor maybe with Ricky Rubio's agent. So maybe look out for that as far as July 1st, July 2nd goes. That makes a lot of sense as far as getting Rubio in the building. And like Brennan said, I was going to do Noah Vonleh for my power forward option there as well, because he might be a guy you get pretty cheap, around $5 to $7 million per year. And I really like what I've seen so far in flash with Noah Vonleh. So maybe take a gamble on him, roll the dice to see what his upside looks like next to Ayton. Because as far as defense goes, I mean, Vonleh provides a lot of what you want next to Ayton. So I really would like to see Rubio and Vonleh in there. But before we end today's podcast, let's go around really quickly. I'll start with Brennan, then we'll go to Max and David. Your expectations for next season. Do you think after another season now where it's going to be less than 25 wins, possibly less than 15 wins if this really goes off the rails here the last few months of the season, what are your expectations for next year? Is this next year supposed to be the year where maybe 30 wins is the goal, or do you not even know anymore?
I'll start. I say I lean toward not knowing anymore, because it's just been so impossible to follow. But I think Zion's the big factor here. But I'll let our guests kind of elaborate here on what we can expect. Do you want to go, Max?
Yeah, sure. I think that McDonough was making a lot of noises before last offseason about how he wasn't going to bring a bunch of rookies in, and they were going to try to get actual rotation players this time, and then he ended up bringing a bunch of rookies in, the most important positions. I don't think James Jones is going to do that. I think James Jones is, I've seen what happens when you try to do that, and it doesn't work. So I do think they're going to try incredibly hard to plug this team full of veterans who actually make a little bit of sense. And they might not be the highest name guys. We might not even – maybe not even the Ricky Rubio, Nikola Mirotić level guys. But I do think they're going to focus on bringing in a bunch of guys who at least, are NBA players. I don't think we're going to be seeing Isaiah Cannon and Jamal Crawford and even De'Anthony Melton be, the point guards. I think we're going to be seeing real players there, even if they're not very good ones. So I think that gives you a lot of reason to think they'll be at least, better. I'm not going to say 30 wins yet before I see what happens, because in this current NBA, especially in the West, 30 wins is not the easiest thing in the world to do anymore. it's a higher threshold of the 30 wins than it was a decade ago to 30 wins. So that's tough. But and then as and also as Brandon brought up, Zion's real. We have a 14% chance at everything changing. Is the way I'll put it. But as far as that we are right now, I'll say better. But 30 wins, we'll see on that.
Yeah, the Zion variable makes it very hard to plan because, you know, you land that pick and things change very, very quickly for the better, obviously. But I think it just goes to show how much this season is a complete waste because, you know, everything that we're probably going to be talking about this offseason and goals for next season is going to be exactly what we were thinking for this season. Get a point guard, hopefully another season. Learning Igor's offensive scheme is at least a good thing for this team. And yeah, they can aim at, you know, having a respectable season around that 30 wins. As we've all said, it's impossible to predict right now. And, you know, we'll probably be a little bit more gun shy than what we were last off season in terms of predicting those kind of jumps in this team, because we're kind of just at the point where we need to see it. But I think Max makes a good point. I think Jones, for everything that he said, he is going to try his best to execute on this plan rather than completely backflip on it like McD seemed to do. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch for the offseason. But yeah, I think they're going to plug in as many veterans as they physically can with the assets and space they have available to them. And it's pretty much go time to impressing Devin Booker. You know, we haven't really spoken about that on this episode, but I'm sure you guys have many episodes in the past in fact, I know you have. So they've wasted another season. It's the start of his extension. They need to make a big leap next year before the drums kind of start banging around Devin Booker wanting out.
This has been really fun, guys. I did not realize we've almost gone almost 2 hours and combined both the episodes. So really appreciate the fun conversation we've had. But either you or Max or David, either one of you guys want to plug your podcast. I know the Suns podcast community can be sometimes volatile at points, but we are very friendly podcast over here, Locked On Suns. So go ahead and plug whatever you guys want to do for 7 seconds or less.
We appreciate you guys and appreciate you having us on. And we've always tried to share as much as possible, and we'll definitely have you guys back on our pod soon. But Max does all of our plugging stuff, so I'm going to throw to him to rattle off all that stuff for us, Max.
I was hoping you were going to give me a break, David. first of all, yeah, I go with David said, appreciate it. Brendan, we got to get you on. We had some scheduling conflicts, but soon it's coming.
Yes.
But you can follow me at MaximCC11 on Twitter. You can follow David at The 4 Point Play on Twitter. Our podcast at 7SOLPod on Twitter. We're going to have the great Kellen Olson, who we referenced a few times in here, on. Actually, we already recorded it. It's coming soon. So look out for that. And appreciate coming on as always, guys. Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, guys.